You're listening to the Vineyard Milwaukee podcast. For more information about Vineyard Milwaukee Church, visit vineyardmilwaukee.com. Now here's this week's message.
So I'm hoping everyone had a good week. Everyone have a good work week? Some people are like, yep. Some people are like, it was work, right? If you were here over, I think it was last week, Rebecca shared, we just have gone through a sort of a work transition in our household. For those who weren't here last week, Rebecca actually started a new job. She is now a Milwaukee Public School teacher. Yeah, again. This is she did this when we first moved here. Then I stayed home, and that was the hardest job I've ever done in my life. And I was begging, like, please, can I go back to work outside the house? There's this two-year-old attached to my ankle at all times, and I got to get out of here. And we flipped, but now she's going back into the classroom, and it's kind of a unique situation because she not only is going back into a classroom, she's actually our daughter's teacher now. She's now the teacher of Abigail's class, which is crazy because it all happened over a phone call. Like, she was hired and assigned the classroom of our daughter on the phone. Like, it was a wild story. So she's back at work. That means I've transitioned to back at home. And some of you are like, yeah, I don't know. Like, that's, yeah, but it's hard. I'm back to doing the hard stuff again. So our week has been interesting. It's been an interesting work week. And so what's funny is that actually that's what we're going to kind of dive into a little bit today. Is this idea of work. We've been studying the book of Ephesians, and we're almost to the end. And I don't know if you've enjoyed it. Some of you, I think, have enjoyed it. Some of you may be like, you know, I'm ready for Christmas. Bring on Advent already, you know? But I've really enjoyed Ephesians. And so we've got today, and then we have next week, and then we're done. So next week when Josh comes and preaches, which we're really excited about, He'll bring the last sort of sermon for Ephesians. So I want to give you a little bit, the first part of the sermon is going to be a little bit academic focused, okay? A little bit academic content, because in chapter 5, Paul takes on Aristotle, a famous philosopher, and he wrote these things called the household codes, Aristotle did, and they were sort of a prominent thing in the day. And they address sort of the moral household and what it meant to have an ordered household, what was good and proper and the way households should be run and the way they should be led. And so they're called the Aristotle house codes. And that's really what Paul is addressing in this chapter of Ephesians. He's addressing the Aristotle house codes. And so I want to read to you a portion of the Aristotle house codes so we know kind of what Paul is going up against here. It says this, of household management, we have seen that there are three parts. One is the rule of a master over slaves, another of a father, and a third of a husband. A husband and a father, we saw, rule over wife and children, both free, but the rule differs. The rule over his children being a royal, over his wife, a constitutional rule. For although there may be exceptions to the order of nature, the male is by nature fitter for a command than the female. I'll just pause for a second there. You can have a collective groan of some sort. Just as the elder and full grown is superior to the younger and more immature. The free man rules over the slave after another manner, from that in which the male rules over the female, or the man over the child. Although the parts of the soul are present in any of them, they are present in different degrees. Whew. So that was the household code, and that is what Paul is coming up against. He's going, wait a minute. So Paul starts his household code. And he starts sort of combating this stuff. And he first starts with this. And we heard this a couple weeks ago, right? He starts with husbands and wives. Aristotle said the man rules over the wife. He treats her with kindness, but rule over your wife is the language Aristotle says. Paul says, well, yeah, we know that the wives have been told to be submissive, but the call is a mutual submission. In verse 5:21, it says that out of reverence for Christ, you mutually submit to one another. And then if you remember, Rebecca talked about how it's sort of that downward framework. We're constantly mutually submitting to each other, right? And so he says, not only women, but men you submit. It's a downward race. We seek to honor and to serve one another. And then what Paul does, like last week we went over, he addresses the talk about children, right? And Aristotle says, what you see here, the younger, the immature, the father is ruling over them. And Paul says, yes, but he does something very radical. He addresses dads. And he says, and so he says, dads, don't wear out your kids. Like, train them up. Train them up. And that was a radical thing to say in that day. No one was talking to dads in that way. And so Paul is sort of redefining Aristotle's household codes. Okay, he's redefining. And today he moves on to this idea of slaves and masters. So I want to go ahead and read Ephesians. We're going to dive into Ephesians 6, verses 5 through 9. It says this: slaves, obey your earthly masters with respect and fear and with sincerity of heart, just as you would obey Christ. Obey them not only to win their favor when their eye is on you, but as slaves of Christ, doing the will of God from your heart. Serve wholeheartedly as if you were serving the Lord, not people. Because you know the Lord will reward each one for whatever good they do, whether they are slave or free. And masters, treat your slaves in the same way. Do not threaten them, since you know that he who is both their master and yours in heaven, and there is no favoritism with him. Now there's some radical things happening in this text. First of all, Paul addresses slaves. And that's a radical thing. That never happened. And slaves they were sort of more as property. So what we're going to do is this morning I'm going to just address slavery for a minute in this text. And like I said, this first part is just a little bit academic, but we're going to try to talk about the issue of slavery first. And what I want to give is like a 4-minute little framework about slavery, specifically with this text. So when we talk about issues of work, because Paul, and that's what we're going to do. We're going to talk about issues of work later on, because that's really what Paul is talking about. And this is issue of slavery, if we talk about that for a moment, because unfortunately, in the 1800s, evangelical Christians took this passage almost to like say slavery was okay, right? They used it to sort of promote slavery. And you have to understand context, because all meaning is context dependent. Okay, it's really important to understand. All meaning is context dependent. So we have to look at what the context of what Paul was trying to do in this letter to truly understand it. So if you just come into this passage and you just read it without understanding the context, a lot of times you're going to miss what he's really trying to say. And this was what a lot of evangelical pastors did. They said, well, Paul didn't say slaves should be free in this passage. Well, then slavery must be okay. And so they took on that mentality, and except Paul, he didn't say, you're right, he didn't say slaves should be free in this text. Man, I wish he would have, but he didn't. And living in the time right now, man, I wish he really would have said it right there. But so we have to look at what's happening. What is happening in this text? What is going on here? And unfortunately, many pastors and Christians use that, but Paul is not addressing the institution of slavery in this passage. That's really important to understand. That's not what Paul is doing. Remember, Paul is talking about Aristotle's household codes. And he's trying to sort of re-image for us in a light of what it is that God has done for us in Jesus. So what Paul is really after is not the institution of slavery in this text, but what Paul is after is how do we live in our households? Paul is focused on, you know, what do you do come Monday morning, right? You've read my letter on Sunday. How do you get better? How do you do this together, right? How do you now live out the gospel of Jesus Christ on Monday morning? And so he's not talking about the institution. Now, it's fair to say, and it's important to know, that there are many passages in the Bible, in Scripture, that talk about the evil institutions and injustice of slavery. There's tons of them, okay? And it is out of those kinds of passages all over the rest of the scriptures that it was the Quakers and the evangelicals that were the ones absolutely unequivocally pushed for to abolish slavery, right? And that's what happened. That's a historical fact. So Christians, followers of Jesus, did look at scriptures and see that God hates injustice and he hates the evil that is embedded in those systems, and they worked to abolish slavery. And that happened. And so there are other passages we can look at to back that up, okay? It just happens that this passage, okay, he's talking about household codes. He's talked about household code. The other thing that may or may not be an interest to you is that slavery in Paul's day was not exactly how we picture slavery in North America. Now, don't get me wrong. All slavery, of course, is bad. But it was a little bit different. It was more, at this time, if we're looking at context, it was a little bit more of indentured servanthood at that time. Most of the slaves in Paul's day were from the Roman Empire. They were prisoners of war. They were conquered by countries. They were brought back, of course, against their will, which is not good. And it was not right. And they were prisoners of war. But it's important to note that the slaves actually had some rights back in that time, in this system. Not like they did in the 1800s, when slaves, for example, they back then they could go to court if they were treated unjustly. There was actually some laws in place where they could go to court, and they were paid, and many of them actually could buy back their freedom. Or in some cities, once you were 30, you were released free, or if you were held slave for 7 years, you were set free. So the slavery was different then. Not right, not just, still really, really bad, but I just want to be really clear where we are in this text. And so what you have to imagine when Paul writes this letter is that it is being read in your living room, in your house, in your kitchen. And if you can think about your living room and couch. And basically what you have is you have maybe 20 or 30, 40, 50 people crammed in your room. And it may represent like 4, 5, or 10 families and their servants, their slaves. And this letter that we're diving into, Ephesians, is being read to them. It's being read to them. And they're interacting with what Paul is trying to say. And he's addressing those household codes. So imagine everyone in that room, and as Paul undoes the Aristotle house codes, everyone is in shock because husbands are hearing something that they've never heard before. Fathers are hearing something that they've never heard before. And then slaves are being addressed. Like, this is crazy. The fact that Paul would even talk to them and that Paul would talk to their masters and tell them how to treat them was extremely radical in that day. So that is the passage that we arrive at today. And when we read this, we should be asking the question, so what? Like, why does this matter today? What? I don't have slaves. I don't have servants. I don't gather and read letters in my kitchen. Like, how does this affect me? And I would suggest that when Paul is talking about this master-slave interaction for us, he's talking in a way. For us, it's that boss and the person that's under them. It's that worker relationship. He's talking about how we work. Work is hard, right? It can be really challenging. Even if we like what we do, there are always moments where you're like, oh, why am I here? You know, how did I end up at this cubicle? Like, this is awful. This is hard. What I'm doing right now is not meaningful at all. Like, I have no passion for this. If I have to, for those Office Space fans, if I have to fill out one TPS report, you know, today, I'm going to blow up, you know? I mean, it's just that mundane, you know? Everyone has that, no matter what your job is. No matter what your job is. There's issues with your job that are just hard. There are people involved. I don't want to be here. You know, I used to be a social worker, and I loved the interaction that I would have with my clients. I used to work in this organization called the Huckleberry House, and we used to see adolescents with severe mental health issues, and we would do wraparound planning, and it was awesome. And we would get down in the community with them and engage them and help them with interviews and things like that. And I hated the job because we had to write down everything we did. So if I spent like 30 minutes with one of my clients, I'm spending like 3 hours typing out every minute that was said. I hated that part of my job. And it wound up being most of what I did, you know? And then now I stay at home. I've done this before. You know, the laundry is never finished. You never get that pleasure of going, "Oh, look what I have accomplished. It is finished." No, it's never finished. People keep dirty the dishes. People. Sorry, some of my family are in the room. Put your dishes in the dishwasher. If it's clean, empty it. You know, it's never done. It's never done. And you're like, I'm passionately folding these clothes. Like, that doesn't, sorry, I don't have it in me. I don't have it. It's hard. You know, I lived in the cubicle life too for a while. And man, that's a whole other genre of challenges, right? Sometimes you can walk in and you sit down and you just like stare for like the first 15 minutes, like, okay. Some of you are nodding your heads like, oh, yep, 15. If you're only 15 for you, Dave, I'm like 30, you know. You stare and then you're like hoping, like, I don't know, like you got nothing really to do. You're hoping someone comes by, like maybe you want to chat a little bit. Or maybe you're the opposite. Please don't anyone come in my cubicle. Leave me alone. I'm staring into the blank screen on my computer. It's hard. Here's a description of work from this author. His name is called Studs Terkel. Isn't that the coolest name ever? Studs Terkel. He wrote a book called Working. And this is a quote from his book. It says, "This book, being about work, is by its very nature about violence. To the spirit as well as to the body. It is about ulcers as well as accidents. About shooting machines as well as fistfights, about nervous breakdowns as well as kicking the dog around. It is above all, or beneath all, about daily humiliations. To survive the day is triumph enough for the walking wounded among the great many of us." Ugh, work, right? Work. But here's what Paul does. In this letter today, he addresses three things. He says, work is from God, work is for God, and work is through God. So in Ephesians 6, 7 through 8, he says this. He says, "Serve wholeheartedly as if you were serving the Lord, not people, because you know that the Lord will reward each one for whatever good they do, whatever they are, slave or free." And so I do want to encourage you, dive into the book of Genesis. Look through chapters 1 through 12. And it's true, you really should, because if you want to figure out like the way God intended things to sort of go and the way things should go through became broken and upside down, right? Spend some time in Genesis. It really is a book you can just dive into, and it shows you how things kind of work. God gave work to Adam, and he put him in the garden to work before sin came into the world. Now, I don't know about you, but manual labor's hard. It's hard, right? I've had a lot of jobs in my life, just so you know. If you haven't figured that out, like, I've been everything from a piano man in McDonald's in the country of Norway to a social worker to an Uber driver to a pastor to a teacher to you name it. I've even done construction. Like over the last few months, I've been working construction for Chad. Guy comes to our church. He's a roofer and does siding and soffit stuff. He's got me doing stuff that I don't recommend you do. I'm going up ladders sideways and hanging off the side of things that, and it's like we were out there when it was like 9 degrees, and I'm like, don't you call off work when it's that cold? He goes, "No, we got to go on the roof." On the roof? Like, what? You know, work is hard. Manual labor is hard. And when I work for Chad, I always wake up the next day and I'm like, oh, my back. You know, you ever have that moment? You wake up and you're like, or is that, maybe it's not even physical labor for you. You're just like, you're groaning the Monday, right? Oh, I got to get out of this bed. I got to get out of this bed. And that's not how God actually created work to be. I don't think he did. In Genesis 2, it was a beautiful thing that God gave Adam work and good work to do, and Adam was delighted to do that work. Work was from God. Now, Paul addresses the slaves, and that is pretty radical, but watch what he does next. He says in verse 9, he says, "And master, treat your slaves in the same way." He's essentially putting master and slave on the same footing. Human dignity matters. Work matters for both you in the same way. In the same way. You may not be using all of your gifts. You may not be doing the things that you're most passionate about. But remember that your work is from God. And then he turns to the master and says the same thing. He says, "You're no better. Like, you're in the same spot. Remember, what you do and treat people with dignity and respect, you do that because your work is from God. It's from God." This is what was so radical about Martin Luther in the Reformation. He starts to preach about the priesthood of all believers. And it used to be that you would like go to church on Sunday, you pay your tithe, then you leave, and you live your secular life Monday through Saturday, and then you repeat, right? And that's the way it was. But then Martin Luther came along, and he said, "Wait, that's not what the scripture says." Everything's context dependent, remember? And he says, "Teach the priesthood of all believers that no matter where you are at, no matter what you're up to, that you represent Jesus and you carry Jesus with you." It's from God. It's from God. There's an author, Dorothy Sayers. She's got a great quote. I want to share that with you. It says this. She says, "In nothing has the church so lost her hold on reality as in her failure to understand and respect the secular vocation. She has allowed work and religion to become separate departments and is astonished to find that, as a result, the secular work of the world is turned to purely selfish and destructive ends, and the greater part of the world's intelligent workers have become irreligious, right? Yeah. Or at least uninterested in religion. But is it astonishing? How can anyone remain interested in a religion which seems to have no concern with 9/10 of his life? The church's approach to an intelligent carpenter is usually confined to exhorting him not to be drunk or disorderly in his leisure hours and to come to church on Sundays. What the church should be telling him is this, that the very first demand that his religion makes upon him is that he should make good tables." Wow. Wow. Work is from God. Work is from God. It's true. It's great. No matter what you find yourself waking up to tomorrow or doing, whether it's staring at a computer screen, whether it's making copies, whether it's wiping noses, whether it's changing diapers, driving Uber, swinging a hammer, whatever you're doing, you're running to a meeting, the work you do is from God. The work you do is from God. You were placed in your job for a reason, because God placed you there. And I wonder what your life would be like if you actually thought every day like that. I wonder what life would be like if you showed up and go, "God placed me here." Right? No matter where you are in your pecking order. Right? Because we can get lost in that sometimes. I was a teacher for a while. And, you know, I used to have this mindset that the principal ran the building, and then the next one down was the administrator, and then it was the teachers, and then it was the lunch lady, and then the custodian. And I was a teacher, so I felt like I was pretty high up the chain, right? I was pretty important. But I realized that was totally wrong. Like, it's the administrator who runs the building. Then the next, and they're almost equivalent next, is the lunch lady and the custodian. Because if those three jobs right there get all messed up, the whole building falls apart, right? They're the most important people in the building. And I realized I was somewhere to kind of down here to make the things function. But no matter where you are in the pecking order, you can go down all wherever you are, hospitals, you know, doctors are the top, hospital administrators, then the doctors, then the nurses, then the cafeteria people, then the custodians. Wherever you are in that pecking order, you were placed there for a reason, and the work you do is from God. Your work is from God, and it gives dignity to everything you do and everybody you interact with, even if you're not passionate about what you do. Your work is from God. I spent some time in Russia working for the Salvation Army, and I'll never forget, this story always rings true whenever I think about this. I didn't even write it in my notes, but I'm gonna share it anyway. I got to know this general in the Russian army. His name was Vladimir Mikhailovich, and he was this general, super like, just what you would think, like super polished, you know, military guy, straight, like, I swear he couldn't slouch his back if he wanted to. Like, he was a hard dude, you know? And we were working at a summer camp for underprivileged kids outside of Moscow. And the staff had gotten together in the cafeteria, all the campers were in bed and stuff, and we're hanging out. We decided to cook some food in the kitchen, so we're cooking food and we're eating. And we left the kitchen a disaster. We were like, we were college kids, we were dumb. And we just trashed the place. And we didn't think anything of it, and we went back to our cabin, and I remember I woke up around like 3 a.m, I heard something, and I'm like, what is that? What's that noise? And I got out of the cabin, because we live close to the cafeteria, and I walked over, and I saw the light was on, and here was General Vladimir Mikhailovich, who he wasn't even involved with the camp. He was actually, it was a weird governmental camp, and we were using it, and he just happened to be there. And he was in there, and he was washing dishes, and he was cleaning up our mess. And I remember I walked over, and I walked into the kitchen. I go, hey, you don't have to, I'm sorry, you don't have to do it. I'm going to get up early, and I'll clean it up. I'll clean it up. You shouldn't have to do this. And I remember he looked at me, and he goes, I'm going to do this. And I'm like, no, I'm so sorry, you don't have to do this. He goes, you shouldn't do this, I said. You shouldn't do this. He goes, no, I'm going to do this. Like, I'm doing this because it's from God. Like, I do this because I work for God. And I was like, back then, I was like, nice. I don't have to clean the dishes. I mean, I got to be transparent with you, right? I was a stupid college kid. And in that moment, I was like, sweet, I'm going back to bed. But now as an adult, I stop and I look at that story and I'm like, oh my goodness, here was this general in the army. He had literally people who served him all the time, right? And here's this stupid college American kid who is so ignorant and so dumb. And here he is, he's willing to just serve this, and he's happy doing it. He's happy doing it because the work is from God. And Paul's making this very big distinction here in his text. He's saying that you have earthly masters, and that's true, you do. But he's also saying that you have a heavenly master too, right? He's saying that your work is not just from God, it is for God too. Paul addresses this idea of sort of overwork and underwork sort of mentality. You know, your overwork mentality is that, you know, you're trying to get ahead. You're trying to please everyone for self-recognition. I want to look good at what I do. I want the praise, the pat on the back. And Paul is saying you will only have one boss in your lifetime, God. You want to impress someone? Impress God. It doesn't matter what someone else sees in you. That's what he's saying. And he addresses the people who underwork too. You know, I'm punching the clock. I'm just doing the minimum. I just want to get by and unseen. Don't see me in my cubicle. You know, we had cubicles that had high walls. It was great. You could hide. And then they decided they're going to do the low wall ones where you could just see like the foreheads. Sort of weird. It's like, I know someone's there, but I don't know them. Anyway, I'm way off topic. But, you know, doing the minimum. That's like, if you've seen Office Space, that's the guy in the Office Space, right? He's just coming in, whatever, fill out my reports, stare at the computer screen, I'm done, right? I'm checked out. And Paul addresses that. Paul says, don't do that, because you're working for God, right? You're working for God. The truth is, it's all for God. And man, isn't there freedom in that, actually? If you dive into that, there's like real freedom in that. It makes the day a whole lot more interesting, right? So one of the jobs I have is I do Uber and Lyft, and I could go through the motions, and I could take, you know, my passenger from point A to point B, and I could drop them off and not say anything, right? Or I can choose to like engage what I'm doing and see what God is up to. And you'd be amazed at some of the conversations I have with people that desperately need to unload a huge burden that they're carrying, that need to just cry in the car, that just lost their job or lost a loved one, or someone who's struggling with their marriage, or someone who's struggling with faith in general. They have this totally weird picture of Jesus that I don't know where they learned that from, but that's not the Jesus I know. I've had conversations where people that I've driven have actually come and checked out our church. It's been incredible. But if you do, and it's a boring job. All I do is drive, right? But if you choose to see what God is doing, man, that could change everything for you. I wonder if that would change your mindset, that mundane blah. Like, what if you showed up to work and you said, I wonder what kind of adventure God would have for me today. God, show me what you're doing in my mundane world. Show me what you're doing in the conference room. Show me what you're doing in the hospital, in the clinic. Show me what you're doing in the classroom. Show me what you're doing in the office. You know? I think it will radically change your daily life. Finally, and real quickly, Paul addresses this. He says, work is through God. That work is through God because you follow a crucified Savior who lays his life down. And you too can do that exact same thing. You can joyfully serve. Whoever your boss is, whoever your manager is, you can joyfully serve your kids. You can serve because you follow a crucified Savior who laid his life down, who said, I don't come to be served, but I come to serve and to give my life to ransom for many. And when you wake up on Monday morning and you not feel like working, you remind yourself those first three chapters of Ephesians, and then you remember that God hung on the cross for you. He became a servant for you that we might experience true life, true life. And you carry the life of your God into places that he's called you to because that's what you do. You've been created to do that. Amen? Why don't we stand? Hey, we're going to move into a time where we continue to kind of engage God. And we do that through a couple of ways. One of the ways we do that is we sing and we communicate through God. We're not just singing about God, but we're engaging God in worship and singing. The other thing that we do is we have communion. And if you're a follower of Jesus during worship, if you'd like to slip out, we have an open table in the back and receive those elements, and you can kind of come back to your seat and take them as you see fit. The other way that we, an act of worship, is our tithes and offerings, and we collect those in the black box in the back. And the biggest thing that we engage is actually through prayer, an opportunity to actually pray for one another and engage and see what God is doing. And as I was sort of working on the text for today, a couple things kind of stood out for me that I just felt like I needed to share in terms of prayer ministry, and maybe some people might get some prayer for, is that there might be some of you that you might be in a really difficult job right now. Like, it's hard. You're having a hard time like seeing what God is doing in your job. And it's a struggle. Like, it's brutal. Like, you don't want to get up. You don't want to go. And it's creating anxiety. And if that's you, like, I would love Mark and Carol, and there'll be some others in the back of the room, Yami, that will love to pray for you. So if you're having a really hard time at work, you're just like, I got to see more God in my job. Like, get prayer today. Let's invite God into that situation. And then for some of you, I felt like, you know, you're in a when it comes to work, you're in a period of transition. You're sitting there going, I think I actually need to leave my job and go somewhere else. Or maybe you're just pursuing another job, another, maybe a bigger responsibility, a promotion of some sort. Do you know that's a spiritual thing? Do you know that's not just a, you shouldn't consider a new job just because they pay more, you know? Or you really should be spending time in prayer. Like, God, is this where you would have me go? Is this what you would have me do? Should I take that promotion? Should I take this job? Because it's way more about money. Remember, he's placed you there. No matter what you do, he's placed you there, and he has work for you to do there. So it's kind of a big deal. If you have one boss and it's God, you probably should ask him. You probably should ask him if that's the case. So if that's you, you're thinking about transitions, and you're like, ah, I need to bring this to God. I need to bring this to God. And then, I think that's it. I think that's where we're going to go right now. So why don't we worship and pray? And if anything else, if you want prayer for healing, or there's something else that we haven't touched on, and you're like, hey, I came in here and I really want a prayer for this, hey, we'll do that too. Okay? Cool? Good? All right. Let's worship.